Rutgers University School of Business at Camden presents the Quarterly Business Outlook for the first quarter of 2012. This program was recorded January 26, 2012, at the Rutgers University School of Business in Camden, New Jersey. I'm your podcast host, Steve Lubetkin. Welcome to the first installment of the Rutgers Quarterly Business Outlook program for 2012. In this program, a slightly different format and a new location. We're broadcasting from the Rutgers University Camden Campus Center on Penn Street in Camden, New Jersey. And in this program, a change of format, we'll be focusing on green energy for the entire program with our panelists from the industry, Ralph LaRossa, the President and Chief Operating Officer of Public Service Electric and Gas Company, Mitchell Cohen, a counsel with Flaster Greenberg, the law firm in Cherry Hill, and Michael Flett, the Chief Executive Officer and President of Flett Exchange. Moderating the panel is Richard Mitchelfelder, Clinical Associate Professor at the Rutgers School of Business in Camden. Now, a few words about our panelists. Ralph LaRossa became President and Chief Operating Officer of Public Service in October 2006. Before that, he was Vice President of Electric Delivery. He joined PSE&G in 1985 as an associate engineer and advanced through a variety of management positions in the utility's gas and electric operations. In 1998, he was named Gas Industry Magazine's Outstanding Manager of the Year. Mr. LaRossa is a graduate of Stevens Institute of Technology and has completed the Harvard Business School Program for Management Development. Mitchell Cohen is a counsel in Flaster Greenberg's Business and Corporate Law and Real Estate and Land Use Practice Groups, where he spearheaded the development of the firm's interdisciplinary and dynamic alternative and renewable energy legal industry group. As co-chair of that group, he represents clients engaged in or considering business ventures in emerging green energy fields like solar, wind, geothermal, cogeneration, biofuels, and biomass. Most recently, Mr. Cohen was appointed general counsel to the New Jersey Renewable Energy Coalition. He's also an entrepreneur in the renewable energy industry and a principal in National Energy Partners, LLC, a Mount Laurel-based solar energy development company that concentrates its efforts on distributed energy projects for educational institutions, municipalities, hospitals, and large commercial users. The company currently has a significant number of projects, both active and in the pipeline, in New Jersey, Massachusetts, Puerto Rico, Hawaii, and Maryland. And our third panelist, Michael Flett, is Chief Executive Officer and President of Flett Exchange. Michael founded the exchange in 2006 to introduce transparency, price discovery, and liquidity in environmental markets. Michael has more than two decades of direct commodities experience. He has been a member of the New York Mercantile Exchange since 1996 and transitioned Flett Futures into a proprietary trading firm in 2000 to participate in the advent of electronic trading in energy futures, and he has successfully traded over $200 billion in physical futures and over-the-counter financial energy derivatives. Michael's been heralded as a pioneer of environmental markets. His leadership and innovation has afforded him the opportunity to speak at various clean energy conferences and advise utilities, energy companies, financial institutions, Fortune 500 corporations, townships, municipalities, and government agencies on renewable energy solutions. And now let's go to the lectern where Wendell Pritchett, the chancellor of Rutgers University's Camden campus, is about to welcome the guests for today's program.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. I'm Wendell Pritchett. I'm the chancellor here at Rutgers Camden. And I just, on behalf of everybody here, I want to welcome you to this very important discussion about economic development and the future of our economy and future of green jobs. And it's a very exciting discussion, and I think it's exciting for many reasons, but I would say most of all because I think our region is really on the cutting edge in this area, and we're going to learn that and see that this morning. So couldn't be happier to have all of you here today. You're here on our campus, Rutgers Camden campus, on an interesting day for our campus, as we enter into a new phase of as what's been a fairly long conversation about higher education in New Jersey. And knowing South Jersey, as I do, I am sure that we will have a robust and full conversation about the the role of Rutgers Camden in higher education over the next few months. And I would just say to all of you that if you have opinions on that, on Rutgers Camden's role in higher education, I urge you to express them, certainly to me. My email is chancellor@camden.rutgers.edu, but even more, I urge you to express them to the governor and to the our legislative leaders and to the Board of Governors and the Board of Trustees of Rutgers University. With that in mind, we are going to focus on the topic of today, which is the green economy, and we really do have a terrific panel. But before we get started, I want to thank our longtime partners for the outlook, the law firm of Flaster Greenberg and the Chamber of Commerce of Southern New Jersey, both of whom who will be presenting in a minute for their ongoing support of this program at Rutgers Camden. This is the first time, at least in a while, that we've actually had the event on our campus, and I hope that you feel that it's been a successful one. I think it will be, and we really are happy to have you here. With that in mind, it's now my pleasure to introduce my partner, one of my partners in this event, Peter Spergel, who's the managing shareholder of the law firm of Flaster Greenberg. Peter.
Thank you, Chancellor. Good morning. Welcome to this new location. If you hurry, you probably can reserve a room in that new dorm that they're building. That you probably drove by like I did. It looked quite impressive. It didn't look like the dorm I lived in, that's for sure. I'm thrilled to be introducing the panel this morning on a topic that's near and dear to my heart and alternative energy. Flaster Greenberg, as you know, is a full-service commercial law firm in the region, and we have an alternative energy practice group, the co-chair of which sits on the panel this morning. But more importantly, we've decided as a company in the region to put our money where our mouth is and make an effort to go green and reduce our footprint, which includes the recent installation of charging stations in our parking lot for electric vehicles. Again, trying to set an example, I have one on order. So hopefully, hopefully this movement will gain traction and we'll reduce our dependence on foreign energy and increase domestic sources and renewable sources, more importantly. It's my also distinct honor this morning to introduce Deb DiLorenzo, the head of the Chamber of Southern New Jersey. I have the pleasure of sitting on the Chamber's board and witnessing Deb's great leadership at the Chamber. And been proud as a law firm to co-sponsor this event for, I think this is our 15th year. And during our joint sponsorship, we've obviously grown the attendance, and we're thrilled to see so many of you here today to hear about this terrific topic. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Deb DiLorenzo, who has a few words.
Thank you, Peter, and good morning. Oh, here's your paperwork. I don't want to get mixed up with mine. Good morning and Happy New Year to everybody. We're so pleased to feature another distinguished panel again today. Special thank you to Ralph, Mitch, Michael, and Rich for being with us. As you've heard me say in the past, in this economic climate, maintaining your membership with the Chamber is more important than ever. There's no other business organization in our region that provides you with the quality and quantity of events offered by our Chamber, networking opportunities that can give you the advantage over your competitors. And just think, a potential client might be standing or sitting next to you right now. If you're not a member of our Chamber, you may be asking yourself, what is the right business organization for me? And the answer is the Chamber of Commerce, Southern New Jersey. The right people, the right companies, the right events, the right resources, and the right connections in Trenton to grow your business. If you're interested in membership, please see Diana Meyer or Michelle Johnson, who are outside of this room, who are anxiously awaiting to talk to you about joining our Chamber family. I'd like to close by thanking our partners, Rutgers Camden and Flaster Greenberg, for all of their support over many, many years. And now I'm pleased to turn this morning's program over to Dr. Richard Mitchelfelder, who is the Clinical Associate Professor here at Rutgers School of Business Camden. Please join me in welcoming him. Rich?
Thanks, Deb. And I'd like to welcome everyone to the first of the 2012 Quarterly Business Outlook Series. I'm going to be the moderator of the session. First of all, I'd like to thank a couple of parties, our partners, the law firm of Flassler Greenberg and the Chamber of Commerce, Southern New Jersey, for their continuing support of this program and for Rutgers Camden in general. I also want to thank our production team, Choose Cruise, okay, who was filming this event that's going to be rebroadcast on Comcast, and also Steve Lubitkin, okay, who is our podcaster. There's one other individual that I'd like to cite for making the logistics of this event absolutely perfect, and that is I know Samantha Collier is around here somewhere. She called me late last night, and also she was here at 5:30 this morning to make sure this event goes off well. If you say something to Sam about that, she's going to tell you it's my job. Well, if it's her job, she does wonderful at it. So today's Outlook is on a special topic. It's on green energy, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Just to provide a little bit of perspective, and if we take a look at the New Jersey Energy Master Plan of 2011, which is currently in draft form, every few years, the state of New Jersey, you know, we produce an Energy Master Plan, which has been in process, been going on for well over a decade. If you take a look at the Energy Master Plan, if you look at the forecast for electricity between now and 2020, to give an analogy, I would say if we all think of the great white shark in Jaws, which is embedded in all of our minds, especially when we go to the shore and we're swimming in deep water, I would say that the forecast looks something like the profile of Jaws just when it's about to bite. The top end of the jaw represents the forecast demand for electricity in 2020. The bottom jaw represents the forecast for electricity in 2020 after net of green energy and energy efficiency. Well, that bite the energy efficiency and green energy is taking out of the forecast is equal to 3,500 megawatts. I know that may not mean a lot to some of us, but that's the equivalent of 3 nuclear power plants. Okay, remember, there's less than 8 years left between now and 2020. That also doesn't consider Oyster Creek Nuclear Power Plant, another 700 megawatts, which is expected to close. So we're looking at about 3.5 nuclear power plants of electricity that we expect to bite out of our energy needs between now and 2020. Although I've spent decades, have been an advocate, have been in the business, a consultant, an academic, studying green energy and energy efficiency, I'm concerned. I'm concerned about the future of I'm concerned about the future of the economy of New Jersey. You know, given the extreme reliance that we have on green energy and energy efficiency. So our next speaker, who I'd like to introduce to make some comments on that, is he's a leader of the energy industry in the state of New Jersey because he's president and CEO of president and COO of Public Service Electric and Gas, which is the largest electric and gas utility in the state of New Jersey, which also serves electricity to the vast majority of the population of the state of New Jersey. So with those comments, I would like to introduce Ralph.
Good morning, everybody.
First of all, Rich, thanks for the introduction, and Deb and Wendell and Peter, thanks for pulling this thing together. I'll have a couple of opening comments. First of all, for those of you that expected to see Ralph Izzo here, I apologize. He had a death in the family and needed to attend to some things at home, so you got the other Ralph. I've went through my whole life with only knowing my dad as Ralph, and now there's more Ralphs around me than I know what to do with. Secondly, and probably more importantly, you need to know that I'm from North Jersey, one town away from New York State. And I love coming down to Philadelphia area this time of the year, especially when the Giants have an extra game to play. Keep looking for that Super Bowl trophy around here. I can't find one. I don't know what happened. If you want to see one, I can show you where they are.
Ralph, we get to speak after you.
And finally, after setting myself up like that, I if any of you still want to talk to me about the storms or anything else that we may have done to interrupt your service over the last two events that we had here in New Jersey, please feel free to grab me. I'll try to, in all seriousness, try to find out some more details for you or at least tell you a little bit about what we're doing. But today's topic isn't about storms because I could talk about that and tree trimming for an hour. It's really about how do we close that gap on the the needs here in New Jersey that Rich spoke about. And, you know, if you think about PSEG as a whole, and that's I'll start from that standpoint where Ralph Izzo would have started, we're a combined entity. We're a generation company, and we're a utility. And from a generation side of the business, we have, just call it around 10,000 megawatts of power that we generate. We have the nuclear plants that we have down in the Salem County area. We have a couple of coal plants here in New Jersey that we put $1.3 billion of capital investment into over the last 3 years to ensure that they had the cleanest technology possible. We're meeting all of the EPA standards that are being proposed on the country. We're already meeting here. So we have the coal plants. We also have a lot of natural gas plants. And we've always taken the approach that on the generation side of the business, you need a really big portfolio that's diverse because the fuel source could change from a pricing standpoint. And boy, have we learned a lesson about that with natural gas prices. Folks have looked at us and said, boy, why did you spend all that money on the coal plants and back-end technology when natural gas prices came down as much as they have? And the answer we give all the time is if we knew that natural gas prices were going to come down, we'd all have bought a lot of land down in Pennsylvania and not had to work and worry about keeping the lights on here in New Jersey. Because there's a lot of people who have made a lot of money on Marcellus Shale and the exploration that's going on out in Pennsylvania. It's really been a game changer in the industry. And I'll be honest, I think it's going to be a game changer in the country. The finds that we're making on the gas side of the business is phenomenal. And it's all throughout the country. The latest area that's really exploded is up in Utica, New York. Again, a lot of shale gas that's being produced and really is going to feed right into the conversation about electricity. Because there's a major source for fuel to burn in generating plants that produce electricity, natural gas is driving down the price. And so what we're faced with as we sit here and talk about the green economy is how much do we as a society want to spend on the green economy right now when natural gas prices are dropping as dramatically as they are? It's a real conundrum for us to face. I think if you were to step back and say from a purely economical standpoint, the best thing to do is to just build natural gas-fired plants and let the economy take it where it is. And if the price of natural gas goes up, then maybe what we'll do is go back and look at renewables a little bit. My opinion, that would be short-sighted. Because what you need to do, as I said earlier, is look at the whole portfolio of solutions to meet energy needs, whether it be nuclear, coal, or natural gas. You really need to take a strong look at renewables because 10 years from now, 15 years from now, we'll all be saying what a lost opportunity we had. So let's talk about that slice, and I'll take that in a couple of chunks. The first one being energy efficiency. We still believe that the cheapest solution for producing electricity is not to need it, and that's what energy efficiency is all about. So as a company, we have put a lot of effort in, specifically through the utility, in deploying our capital on energy efficiency solutions where customers themselves wouldn't make that choice. What does that mean? Well, it means for a consumer in a low-income area who's walking into Home Depot, I walk down the aisle, and I look at the two light bulb solutions that I have, and there's a $4 light bulb and there's a $1 light bulb. But I also wanted to go to the movies tonight. So what do? I buy the $1 light bulb and I take the extra $3 and I go to the movies. That's a choice that in the long term on a net present value isn't the right solution. But for that individual at that moment with the cash flow that they're facing today, that was the right solution. So what do we try to do as a utility? We try to fill a gap to get people over those capital hurdles. Same reason that 100 years ago, a bunch of folks figured out that the right way to deploy electricity and natural gas throughout the state and water and sewer was to use utilities as an economic engine to get that product out to everyone. So if we're going to provide energy efficiency for folks that can't make that capital investment, use the utilities to do that. When the price comes down, when the economics work, utilities aren't needed. Let the marketplace take off. And you see, and that's what we've done on the energy efficiency front for the residential. We have a lot of programs that focus on residential customers, but again, in low-income areas where that price hurdle is a concern and something that we need to help people get over. Where else have we done a lot on energy efficiency? In the hospital sector. Why in the hospital sector? The same reasoning. For hospitals, their capital decisions are really driven by what new technology they can put in place to attract the patients and the best doctors to provide the best care. They're not as worried about making that capital investment on energy efficiency. We all know some of the challenges that the hospitals have had, so we've stepped up, again, from a utility standpoint and said we'll make some of those capital investments, because all of the people in New Jersey are going to benefit from it, and we'll spread those costs back over all the customers in New Jersey. So, again, where that capital need was, we would step up and put that in place. Fast forward now to the other piece of the chunk that we like to talk about in that jaw, and that's the renewable solution. Lots of different things we can do on renewables. You'll hear everything from, we can burn garbage and we can do different things. Our focus has really been on solar. A little bit of a focus on offshore wind as we continue to think about that as a solution for the state. But until that industry matures and we have some of the deep offshore windmills that we're talking about installing in place, we're really focused our energies on a solar front. And it's been in two areas. One is on a deregulated side of the business, and that we've made investments in solar farms outside the state of New Jersey. But here in New Jersey, as a utility, we've made investments that have resulted in 40 megawatts of solar being deployed in the state of New Jersey so far. Why do we think, again, it makes sense? Because of that capital structure to get over the hurdle. Right now, there's three ways that expenses that come into account on the renewables front. One is the labor to install solar. The second is the cost of the material, which has been coming down dramatically over time. And the third is the cost of the land, or the facilities that you're going to put the solar on, whether it be a rooftop or a farm or an old landfill. What we've tried to focus on is where we can, again, get people over the hurdle, deploy our capital by putting solar on places where it wouldn't be put otherwise. So it's been focused on brownfield areas and landfills and some of the large warehousing facilities that we have across the state. Now, that's the expense side. Why does it make sense to use the utility? Because we flow back all the benefits to the customers. We make a return on our investment on the expense side, but all the benefits flow back to customers. What are the benefits that flow back to customers? Energy. We sell the energy into the PJM marketplace, so all these crazy solar panels that you see on the poles, all of that energy we take, we sell to PJM, and we credit that back to customers. There's also a capacity market for energy. We take the energy, we put it into that capacity market, we sell it into PJM, which is the mechanism for the sales of electricity in this part of the region, and we flow those capacity payments back. But the two biggest things that we have is the subsidies that exist that we all pay for. And those come up in renewables in two areas. One is the ITC that the federal government collects through our taxes and flows into projects, and the second is the solar renewable energy credits, or SRECs, as they exist here in New Jersey. Again, those are all collected through a commodity charge on your bill on a generation side of the business and are collected from all customers. What do we do as a utility? Because we've put the capital in place, because these are assets owned by the ratepayers, we take those investment tax credits and we flow them back to consumers. If we weren't in place, they would flow back to some other entity. Why is that a good thing? You're all paying the federal dollars anyway. Let's get the federal dollars back to the state of New Jersey. Let's take those investment tax credits and flow them back to our ratepayers. From an SREC standpoint, we also flow those all back to the ratepayers. So whatever they're paying on this end into the generation side, what we can sell on the open marketplace, we bring those back and we get them back into ratepayers' pockets as well. So on a net-net basis, four revenue streams coming in to offset those three expenses, still not cheaper. We need to be clear, not cheaper than natural gas fire generation, but certainly something that offsets and keeps the price down if we continue to go down the path from a policy standpoint. So overall, we think to close the jaws that you talked about, you need a couple different solutions. We need to keep all the portfolio options open, and we try to provide some service in each one of those different areas. So with that, I'll turn it back to Rich.
Okay. Thank you, Ralph. I'm very happy to hear that PSE&G is taking a portfolio approach to meeting the energy needs of New Jersey, including energy efficiency, renewable energy, as well as fossil fuels and nuclear power, because I think that renewables and energy efficiency play a very important role, okay, in meeting our energy service needs. However, I do not think it is enough, and I have been involved in resource planning over many years, which traditionally was building more power plants. Now, today, we look at minimizing the use of energy as well as meeting energy needs with alternative generation sources. Next, I would like to introduce Mitch Cohen. He's the co-chair of the Renewables Energy Practice at Flasser Greenberg, and I look forward to hearing his thoughts about the business opportunities in the field of green energy. Mitch?
Thank you, Rich, and Ralph, thank you as well. You heard Ralph and Rich really talk about what is the critical element in the whole field of renewable energy and state allocation of resources. And that's really a sort of a trifecta of issues. One is, how does the state and the federal government want to allocate their resources in renewable energy versus existing resources, fossil fuels, and now the new natural gas exploration? The second issue really is within each state. How does the state want to allocate its resources among various forms of renewable energy? And the third and the most critical element really has to do with costs and what is the impact of implementing renewable energy types of programs in the state and how that passes down to the ratepayer. I'll speak about that in a few minutes. I wanted to just give everybody some foundation information regarding various aspects of renewable energy, both in terms of the energy itself and also how it impacts in New Jersey and how it affects our lives now and as we move forward. Because when it really comes down to it, as we're looking at renewable energy as an alternative to fossil fuels, we need to look at it from an economic point of view, but we also need to look at it from a moralistic point of view as to how what we're doing today will affect our children and our grandchildren. And will we leave this world in a place that will enable our children to be able to utilize the resources they have and to be able to continue to be able to grow their businesses, be able to operate in a safe society. When we talk about renewable energy in New Jersey, as Ralph mentioned and Rich alluded to as well, we're talking about solar primarily because right now, if you look at the state of New Jersey as opposed to Pennsylvania that I'll speak about in a few minutes, solar energy is really the predominant form of energy, of alternative energy, in terms of what you hear about, what you read about, and how it's affecting the state and the state's budget. We also have wind energy, and I'm sure you've heard about the projects in the Atlantic Ocean that New Jersey is trying to promote, as well as other states on the East Coast. We also have biomass and biofuels. Unfortunately, they played a very small role in the state and in the country, and that's something that a number of entrepreneurs and a number of institutions are really trying to promote. And part of the biomass and the biofuels area is renewable natural gas. Renewable natural gas is different from natural gas. When you hear about the Marcellus Shale discovery in the Pennsylvania area, that's natural gas that once it's used, it's disposed of and it doesn't come back. Renewable natural gas from biomass and biofuel sources come from renewable sources that could continue and you don't have to worry about a termination date for those. Rich mentioned the adoption of our energy master plan in the state of New Jersey. And for those of you who haven't seen it or heard about it before, that really is the state guideline as to how it plans the state to utilize and mine its renewable energy and regular energy resources for the short term and the long term. The implementation of the Energy Master Plan is really under the auspices of the Board of Public Utilities, and I'm sure many of you have heard from Lee Solomon before he left office about state policy and under the implementation of the Board of Public Utilities and how that relates to solar, wind, renewable, and nuclear, which, of course, is the fourth form of renewable energy that I'm going to be speaking about today. Under the Energy Master Plan, 22.5% of electric suppliers' resources have to be through renewable energy sources by the year 2021. And when Rich spoke earlier about the draw, to get up to that level requires a tremendous effort, both in terms of infrastructure improvements, and Ralph can allude to that during the question and answer session. In order to engage and in order to produce that much energy, we've got to devote hundreds of millions of dollars to renewable energy sources. Under our current plan in the state of New Jersey, power suppliers have an obligation to utilize a certain portion of energy through either the building of or purchase of solar facilities, and that's called the Renewable Portfolio Standard, or the RPS. In the event that they don't meet those guidelines, they've got to pay a penalty, and that penalty is under the SACP, the Solar Alternative Energy Compliance Payment. So you have your utilities. And again, I'd like to talk. I have a question for Ralph about this when we're done. If the utilities don't either buy solar power or build solar power on an annual basis, they've got to pay a significant penalty. And that penalty in prior years has been into the millions of dollars. So you really have a dichotomy. You've got the push for trying to promote renewable energy, and you've got the penalty as to what happens if the renewable energy isn't produced. And that really deals with a separate issue. Not everybody is in favor of solar energy or other forms of renewable energy. And the question is why? Why wouldn't everybody want to promote solar energy as really a means to help our environment and a means to really produce a form of energy that's not fossil fuel related? Well, there's a couple different reasons. Number one is because if you look at the economics, the thought is that what you're really doing by requiring utilities to pay that penalty payment, it's really a tax on the ratepayers. Why? Because utilities pass that penalty through to the ratepayers, and that's a wide body. When the group of individuals or the group of businesses that are taking advantage of solar energy is a much smaller subset. So that's a critical reason in the discussion and a critical part of the state's energy-related policy. In addition, New Jersey, which has always been known as an agricultural state and really produces a significant amount of income into the state, in utility-scale projects, solar projects, which are projects that involve large solar farms where the power is being sold to the grid, the PJM, as Ralph mentioned before, those types of projects involve 30 acres and 50 acres and 100 acres of property. Generally, those acres are found in South Jersey, and generally those acres are located in farms that will be taken out of production in order for the solar fields to be built. That, by the way, is opposed to what's called a net metered solar project. A net metered solar project, and I know there's someone in the audience now is having one built on a shopping center in Voorhees, New Jersey. That is where a solar field is built either on a rooftop, on a carport structure, or on a ground mount structure where that power produced by that solar system goes directly to the user of that power. It could be a Target or a Walmart or a shopping center owner or a manufacturing facility somewhere on the New Jersey Turnpike. So it's just important to look at the difference between the two. But the concern from the state standpoint is that by building these large solar farms where the power is being sold into the grid, you're taking farmland that would otherwise be available in the state of New Jersey. Michael Flett, who's going to speak after me, Michael is a commodities broker in the renewable energy arena, and Michael will talk a little bit more about an area I just wanted to touch on, and that area really has to do with what is going on with the solar energy industry in New Jersey, because that industry really took off like wildfire about 2.5 or 3 years ago when New Jersey adopted its energy master plan and produced the SREC, which is Ralph mentioned it's a commodity sold. It's a 15-year strip, and you get an SREC for every 1,000 kilowatt hours of solar energy that you produce. You actually get a certificate or the equivalent of a certificate that Mike will tell you can sell for money like cash. So in looking at the solar industry, where solar power is more expensive to produce right now, unfortunately, than fossil fuels, what can promote solar energy in the area? Well, what you have for that, you've got your federal incentives, and the federal incentives include the 30% cash grant that expired on December 31 of 2011, the 30% investment tax credit, which will be around for until December 31, 2017, and you get accelerated depreciation. All of those environmental incentives or attributes are meant to promote solar development throughout the country. On the state level, you have SRECs and as well as certain other loan programs that are available. So the SREC, which is really the foundation of the growth of the solar energy in New Jersey, that commodity strip as recent as 8 or 9 months ago sold for $600 or $590 an SREC. So if your solar field produced that SREC, you could sell it on an annual basis as long as you produce that power for a 15-year period. Well, because of overbuilding of solar fields and net metering projects in the state of New Jersey and the law of supply and demand, SREC prices now range on the spot market from anywhere from $140 an SREC to $190 or $200 an SREC. So all of those solar developers who came into the state that had their pro formas based on a $600 SREC or a $400 SREC, those deals don't make economic sense anymore. And you've heard about out that there's not nearly as many projects in the works in the state of New Jersey, new projects coming online as there had been in the past. A number of solar developers have pulled out of the state market. A number of design, engineer, construction companies are no longer doing the business that they were doing before. That's simply the law of economics, because on the SREC or the environmental attribute part of the equation, those deals no longer make sense. And the issue is, because this is an important issue for the state and the state economy, the issue is what can be done in the state to build that business back up? What can be done to really bring the jobs back into the state that may be lost as a result of the current solar energy development market? And that really would have to be at the state level. Will there have to be adoption of legislation? And the adoption of legislation would do two things. It would accelerate the renewable portfolio standard, which would require or allow more solar megawatts of solar power to be produced, number one. In addition, in order to help the utilities, so the utilities aren't penalized to a significant extent, it would lower that payment, that penalty payment that the utilities would have to pay. And that's a critical element, because you cannot shoulder the entire burden of solar energy on companies like Rouse and other utilities in the state. That has to really be a shared payment or a shared burden. I want to talk about other jurisdictions for a moment, because there really are surrounding neighbors in solar energy. The Pennsylvania solar energy market is really almost non-existent because SREC prices are $10 or $20 in SREC. And the answer is why? The answer is because of Marcellus Shale. There is such a economic boon in that Pennsylvania in the New York area from the Marcellus Shale gas fields being built, and that will be lasting for such a significant period of time and will produce so much natural gas that there's really not an impetus in the Pennsylvania state government to really promote solar energy. Delaware has a fine solar energy program. Maryland does as well. And everybody's sitting on the sidelines to find out if New York is going to open up its solar energy program, because if it does, and because of the size of the state and because of all the manufacturing facilities and the open areas, New York would become clearly a leader in the country if decided to go that route. I want to talk briefly about several other areas of renewable energy that are important to all of us. One is wind energy. The state adopted legislation called the Offshore Wind Economic Development Bill, which supports 1,100 megawatts of electricity, which is a significant amount of electricity, enough to eventually power 250 to 300,000 homes through wind energy alone. Currently online, we have 7.5 megawatts, which is really not a lot, and that's only sufficient power to really to provide the power for 2,000 homes in the area. By the way, if we maximize our wind energy production, we would have the ability to promote $200 billion in new economic activity, and that would create more than 43,000 full-pay jobs. So there's a real reason why the state needs to promote its wind energy at the shore. I also want to speak for a moment about biomass, biofuels, and renewable natural gas. Again, there aren't significant state or federal government incentives available for the entrepreneurs or the scientists that really want to promote biomass and biofuels. That includes renewable natural gas from organic waste, from crop residue, from forest residue, from animal food waste, and from organic industrial revenues. If we were able to adopt sufficient biomass and biofuel programs, we would be able to supply up to 9% of the state's electricity, or up to 5% if it's highway vehicle fuel. So that's really a critical element. And I think in the coming years, as technology increases and the cost of biomass and biofuels decrease, that there's going to be not only in the state level but on the national level big promotion and much larger federal and state governmental incentives. I want to close my talk to talk about renewable energy and just ask this question. The question is, how much of New Jersey's state power is produced by nuclear energy? And I'll just ask for a quick show of hands. Show of hands for people that think it's less than 5%, 5 to 15, 15 to 30, 30 to 60, and more than 60. Okay, the latest statistics that we have is that 49.9% of the energy usage, electricity in the state of New Jersey, comes from our nuclear power plants. And the reason that's critical, because after what happened in Japan and really the push to close down nuclear power plants because of safety-related issues, I was told by some people that know much more than I that if you shut down New Jersey's nuclear reactors, and see what Ralph says about that later, you wouldn't be able to turn your lights on tomorrow morning. And that's just something we really need to think about, because I had no idea the statistic was that high. And let me just give you the comparable statistics. Coal is 9.9%, oil is 0.3%, gas is 37.8%, hydro is 0.3%, and all the renewables that I spent a lot of time talking about just now in the state of New Jersey only amounts to 2.3%. So it just kind of gives you a relative factor. You look at renewable energy at 2.3 in other renewables other than nuclear, and you look at nuclear at 49.9%, and I think that's just something that everybody needs to be aware of. Before I turn it over to Mike, I want to thank Rutgers University. I had the pleasure with a number of other partners of mine of attending and participating in a major renewable energy symposium that was held at Rutgers Camden last year. It was attended by approximately 500 people and really put South Jersey in the map in terms of major science, law, energy, and academic resources being used to really promote getting the word out about renewable energy in the state. And today's meeting, which was a change in focus from the quarterly economic outlook to general economics and retail and commercial businesses to alternative energy, I just think is a courageous step by Rutgers University. We want to thank Rutgers. We want to thank the business and the law school. We want to thank Wendell and Jai and Richard and Raymond, and just say that it's absolutely great being here, and we hope to be back here for future events. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mitch. One of the things that Mitch indicated is that 22%, we have in New Jersey, we have a renewable portfolio standard. That's 22%, which means 22% of our electricity needs by 2021 are supposed to be generated by renewables. And right now we stand at 2.3%. So in a very short time, we have a long way to go. And so this has been why I brought up the steam from the beginning, especially since the predominant resource, as Mitch said, has just indicated, for renewable energy is solar. Now, with that, I would like to introduce Mike Flett. Mike was on the gas commodities broker for the New York Mercantile Exchange, and so he's spent a good part of his lifetime. I don't know how he looks like he spent 15 years anywhere. He looks so young, but anyway, maybe he started when he was 12. But anyway, Mike, he's president and CEO of Flett Exchange. Okay, this is an exchange which trades the asset called the SREC. And so with that, Mike.
Thank you, Rich. One thing when I do these speeches, I just want to make sure that I don't make the mistake of leaving and someone saying, what is an SREC? Because then I've really made a mistake. So I'd just like to go over, and everyone, when you leave here, you'll understand what an SREC is. And those of you who have solar and have invested in solar on your businesses, I'll end up and give you some indications on where we stand with SREC's values today and where we expect them to go forward for the next few years. So first of all, what is an SREC? Mitch, you covered what a renewable portfolio standard is, which is just a goal from a statewide, and that is to get 20% of our energy from renewable resources, usually by a certain date. The key was always 20% renewable by year 2020 when they first started talking about this about 10 years ago. And as you know, as time goes on, goals always change to some degree. But at right now, the renewable portfolio standard, we have a solar carve-out. So just the segment that is solar is by year 2026, under law, the amount of electricity generated by solar is to be 5.3 gigawatt hours a year. So that means nothing to anyone, 5.3 gigawatts. But what that means in terms of where we are in building out to reach these goals, New Jersey has built about 10% of the solar to reach the ultimate goals by year 2026. So it gives you a little bit of a perspective. Everyone says, you know, New Jersey solar, boom, bust type of cycle. But where are we in comparison to the renewable portfolio standard? Where are we in building an infrastructure in the long term? We have about 600 megawatts installed in New Jersey. We'd need about 9 to 10 times that amount to reach our end goals. So just to make sure you know where we are in terms of building. So why do we need an SREC? Clearly, the reason we need an SREC is because to build generation, to generate electricity, it's cheaper to build assets that burn gas, coal, nuclear. Solar is more expensive. If we expect to have a certain amount of solar energy and have people invest in New Jersey, we need to give them an added incentive. That added incentive created is an SREC. So I'll give you an example. A typical house in New Jersey can fit a 10 kW system on the roof. That will cost about $5 a watt, roughly $50,000. After the federal incentives, which are about 30%, out-of-pocket cost is still $35,000. When you look at your typical bill, maybe it's $1,000 or $1,500 a year, that's not really enough of a return to get somebody to invest $35,000 to put this on their house. If you have a business, you're using a multiple of this. So you can see how capital-intensive solar energy is. So the SREC component is the incentive to get you to a higher rate of return so that over time we can build the amount of solar necessary to reach our goals. So if you have a $35,000 out of pocket and you're only saving $1,000 to $1,500, right now the current SREC price is $200. So that 10 kW system will produce about 12 SRECs a year. You sell them on my exchange, you get a check for approximately $2,400. You add the $2,400 to the amount you saved by not paying PSE&G, unfortunately, is then that brings you up to $3,500, $4,000 on a $35,000 investment. That starts to make sense. 10% return, I mean, that starts to have money flow. So that gives you an idea what an SREC is. You earn an SREC with every 1,000 kilowatt hours. So once a month, you take your meter readings right off of your meter in your house or in your business, you download it into the state database, and it generates an SREC. Then you can go and sell that on a monthly basis on my exchange. The entities that buy the SRECs are energy companies in New Jersey, and they're required by law every year to buy a certain amount of SRECs. Now, what determines the price of an SREC? It's supply and demand. Like I mentioned, the renewable portfolio standard, every single year, there's a certain amount of SRECs that all the energy companies have to buy. This year, it's 442,000 SRECs. If there is too much solar installed collectively around the state, there's going to be too many SRECs. The market will be flooded. The SREC price will trend on the lower end, somewhere around $100 or $200. In previous years, while the infrastructure was not – while there was not enough infrastructure to generate the amount of SRECs, the energy companies were out there buying. There just weren't enough SRECs to go around, hence you had a $600 SREC. So where do we stand right now in the state of New Jersey in terms of installed solar? Like I mentioned, we're only 10% of the way installed. However, in the short-term demand, we are outstripping that demand. We are going to most likely produce 35 to 40 to 45% more SRECs than the energy companies need this year. So we're expecting over the next few years SREC prices to stay low. So when you have this household and they're looking at doing this investment, and as the SREC price goes lower, like I mentioned, if it's $200, you're hitting about a 10% return if you can get it put in for that amount of money. If the SREC prices move down to 100, you start to see the market fluctuate, people slow down. Maybe they can think they can get a better return somewhere else. They can always tell me. I can't seem to make more than 1%. But So that's what determines the price of an SREC, and that's where the state of the SREC market is today. There's also a little bit of a confusion over what is the spot and the long-term prices of SRECs. And there's always been criticism, the prices of SRECs were $650 for years and years. But what one of the things when investors called us and they're like, Mike, okay, SRECs are $600. I'm going to put in solar and get me a contract for 10 years at $600. It was never available. The long-term contract pricing in a market that's short, the energy companies, they knew that there's a potential for the market to get oversupplied, and so they will only offer prices probably half of the spot price when the market was short. So when SRECs were $600, the availability for a five-year forward strip was somewhere around $385, $400 if you were lucky at the top of the market. Right now, the forward strips are running about $160 for a five-year strip or a four-year strip. That comes down to how does my company interact? We started in 2007. There was only a few hundred installations in New Jersey, most of them homeowners. They needed to sell their SRECs. So what we did was we created an electronic platform. Since I was on the floor of the NYMEX, all my customers were energy companies. They had a new renewable portfolio standard. And so I went around and I said, hey, listen, I have an exchange here. Would you like to compete for my customers' SRECs? Fast forward to today, we have about 4,000 installations in New Jersey that sell on our marketplace on a spot basis out of about, I'd say, the 14,000 or 13,000 installations. If you're going to invest in solar, we also speak to businesses that are going to invest significant amounts of money, and we can arrange for a long-term contract somewhere between 1 and 3 or 4 years, so you can lock in that price for your SREC. So you don't have to worry about the SREC market going down to $50 and really hurting your IRR. So if anybody has any questions, feel free to call me or just grab me afterwards. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. So if anybody has any, if anybody's thinking about developing a photovoltaic project and you have SRECs, please call Mike and he'll sell them for you. He certainly deserves so because he's done a lot in terms of promoting the photovoltaic or solar energy marketplace in the state of New Jersey. Now you've been listening to us for about 45 minutes, 50 minutes, and we'd like to open it up to the audience for questions.
Yes, my name is Bill Natal from URS Corporation. Mitch, it was good hearing about renewable, but I don't look at nuclear as renewable. It keeps on decomposing, so don't even pull that in. I'm an engineer from way back. But this question really comes back to Ralph, and only because I keep on looking back, and when you start taking megawatts per acre, it doesn't make worth your while to go solar. Why haven't you pushed more for the offshore, not the wind, but offshore turbines? Tide never stops. Sun goes in, sun comes out, the tide never stops, and you've got more coastline in the state of New Jersey than any other state in the country. So you've got these turbines that would be worth it. The other is, why don't you go out and show a good faith effort? Everybody flushes their toilets. Take the sludge. Build regional digesters. Use the digester gas. Turn to all of these landfills. Now we're sending all of our landfill material out to Pennsylvania, and they love that. And instead, keep it here in the state, take that type of gas, burn it, and use this for renewable fuels. Why have you not been looking into that realm under PSE&G?
So I never thought I'd be in a sewer business, but I think there's a couple pieces to that, Bill. Again, all joking aside. First of all, PSE&G is not allowed to be in the generation business. PSE&G is only allowed to do certain things in that qualify under renewable portfolio standards. So we don't necessarily have an arm of the utility that does that. So a lot of what you spoke about are required to be done through our deregulated entity. If the state of New Jersey asks us to do that, if policymakers would like us to go down that path, those are certainly things that we can consider. Because, again, I think to get over those hurdles, you're going to need subsidies to make that happen. So it goes back to the conversation we had earlier. just in general about the two technologies? I know that there's a lot of folks that are testing tidal turbines. There's one in the East River. There's one in the Hudson. There's a couple different spots that they're around. They show some promise, but they've had some challenges. And I think, again, from a financial standpoint, on a cost per megawatt generated, it's had some hurdles to get over yet, and something that is certainly worth continuing to pursue. But whether or not, you know, it's going to become viable in the near term, I'm not sure that ratepayers, it's the right thing for ratepayers to be investing in that R&D. On the other front, and biomass or bio waste, and a number of different ways you can look at that. Again, that's a pure generation play, and that's something that we even have the skill set within the utility to do right now. So all the utilities, not just PSE&G, but all the utilities in the state of New Jersey, have divested all of their generation. There are, in our case, we do have an arm of the company that does that, and they look at that purely on an economic basis right now. We are just to the nuclear point, though, and I think it's tied together. That side of the business is continuing to pursue opportunities on the nuclear side. We're just doing an early site permit down in the Salem area. There's going to be a lot of challenges there from an economic standpoint because, again, if you look at what prices of natural gas are right now, it doesn't make a ton of sense for folks to be, you know, going with a full-blown nuclear plant.
My name is Sandy Johnson, and I'm with the Camden Redevelopment Agency. And, Ralph, my question is to you or anybody else who would like to join in. Thank you for this panel of greening. My question is about public space and lighting and solar paneling. When we do it on public-owned land, can it be maintained by PSE&G? Our research is going different ways right now. And the not only the pole, but also the solar panel, and even the negotiations regarding any savings or any SREC calculations or transactions.
So this is specific to municipal.
Yes.
Right.
So public property.
So we do that. The best example that we have right now is with the city of Newark. Uh-huh. and their school system, where we have rented, for lack of a better term, the roofs in the city of Newark as under a pilot program that the Board of Public Utilities allowed us to pursue. And we are paying a rental fee, which is in the seven figures, to the Newark school system for the ability to put the solar panels up on the roof. But those benefits, after we pay the rental fee, go back to all the ratepayers in New Jersey. Okay. So when we sell the electric, it's going to offset the cost. When we sell the capacity, it's going to offset. The solar renewable energy credits, it's going to offset. All those four revenue streams that I spoke about. So we're paying a rental fee because it makes sense, in my opinion, to use public-owned buildings and land, because we're ratepayers and taxpayers are one and the same. The taxpayers already paid for the building. They've already paid for the roof. So why not make use of that rather than have their money flow in another way? That's why landfills, and I think, you know, the Christie administration is right on target with the landfill effort that they're trying to push.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I'm specifically asking for lighting, pole lighting. I mean, for example, we're building a new park in front of City Hall,
right.
And I'm going to the lighting of that park and putting solar panels on that lighting. Is that something that PSE&G does, and do you maintain it as well?
Again, there's multiple ways that you can do lighting. One is you can do a private, where we just give you it's a 1 meter, and it's a private lighting solution that you have. Or we actually, as you see everywhere else, the street lighting that we have. We have multiple options. I don't know specifically off the top of my head whether or not we have a solar generated light solution that we could provide to you, but we have a few people here. Is Mike Coyles? Mike's still here?
Okay.
Coyles still here? So Mike's right behind you. He can, or somewhere in the area, he could help you with some of the options that we have.
We have time for one more brief question before this session ends.
I have a question for the panel. Most of what you talked about in the alternative space requires government subsidy or incentives to make economically viable, as you've said. And I know, Mitch, you've met with the governor's people in New Jersey recently about what, if any, incentives they're going to change or restrict. And as a lawyer who represents developers in the alternative space, getting financing is often very difficult, especially in this economy, but it's made extra difficult by government uncertainty. Because if you're relying on a cash flow stream from an SREC and you can't count on the government maintaining regulations that would create value in an SREC, how do you go and convince a lender to lend you money? So I was wondering what the panel has heard about the legislative roadblock that currently exists in the state of New Jersey in this area.
I'll start that, Peter. And you really hit a critical issue, because whether it's solar or any other area, renewable energy, but talking particularly about solar, if the economics of the deal does not work either for an equity investor or for a senior debt lender who is interested in lending into a solar project, then the project just doesn't get done. And without the ability of the financial marketplace supporting this type of project, and will only support it if the economics works, you just will not have significant jobs and projects completed in the state. To answer your question specifically, we understand that at the last legislative session, which ended, I believe, on January 9th, there was a push at the last minute to really have legislation which would have accelerated the renewable portfolio standard, which would meant it would have increased the number of megawatts that the power providers would have had to either purchase or produce. That at the last minute, that legislation did not go through, and it's going to be brought up at the next session. I do understand that there are some issues involving labor and the state government in terms of how the large-scale utility projects will be addressed in grandfather clauses, because there's issues with the state not wanting to have 10-megawatt or larger projects for the reasons that we talked about before. So I think, Peter, it's really uncertain. If I had to handicap it, I would say I couldn't tell you whether or not that legislation that will improve the solar energy marketplace will occur. The groups such as the New Jersey Renewable Energy Coalition and other sponsored organizational groups and industry representatives are really trying to work with the state government. I would say right now that if it does happen, it'll probably happen within the next 3 months. But I want to know if maybe Ralph can talk about that. But right now, there's no financial certainty in the marketplace.
Yeah, I'll just real quick. At the end of the day, I think that you hit right on it. There's a challenge in with labor, specifically on some of the historic projects that were planned, and mostly because I would say the tension on the greenfield versus landfill solution. The Governor Christie has, you know, we've all gotten to know him very well over the last few years, and he has. He sets forth a policy, and he tries to follow that policy. And if you look at the Energy Master Plan, it talks about landfills. And I think that's really where the focus needs to come for that solution to be successful.
Okay. That concludes our session today. On behalf of Rutgers School of Business in Camden, we'd like to thank our partners, Flasser Greenberg, as well as the Chamber of Commerce, Southern New Jersey. And we'd also like to thank our panelists for coming today. Please look forward to into future events as we're planning them, and be looking for your email. They will be coming soon. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, and have a great day.
We hope you enjoyed this program from the Rutgers University School of Business at Camden. Our thanks to Samantha Collier and Michael Sapanek of Rutgers Camden for their assistance and support in producing these programs. We are looking for sponsorship support for this program series. If your company is interested in sponsoring these podcasts, please drop me a line at steve@lubetkincommunications.com. And we do produce these programs in the studios of Lubetkin Communications in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. We're on the web at lubetkin.net. For everyone at the Rutgers University School of Business in Camden, this is Steve Lubetkin thanking you for being with us, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.